Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
Hello. Yes, you are a wonderful audience, and I've got special reasons I'm going to tell you about. And this is Peter Bregan, and this is the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour on Wednesday, August 1, 2018 at 4 p.m. New York time. Now, what's with the new introduction? What's with my saying it's 4 p.m. New York time? Well, you know, I made available for the first time a line right in about the show. That's a regular, you know, .com. You can just, email me. And that line has really brought me all kinds of wonderful, wonderful information. It's called BreganLive@Hotmail.com. BreganLive@Hotmail.com. And one of the callers and one of the emailers, I'm still getting used to all this technology, was Emily. And I want to thank Emily, who explained to me that she had no idea how to call in because she got the show at 6 a.m. She got the show at 6 a.m. in the morning, and so she didn't know what time the show actually was. So I'm going to be beginning it every time now, reminding people it's 4 p.m. New York time, and I'm going to throw in the date as well so that people will know if it's a replay, because that's been an inconvenience, people not knowing whether I'm doing a replay or not. That was not Emily. That was Denise. I also got a call from Emily. Boy, it's going to be hard for me in the beginning here to just get all this stuff organized. Emily called and asked, you know, how in the world do I recover after I've come off of psychiatric drugs. So I'm going to do a special show in response to Emily, and that's going to be August 15th. We're going to do a show where I'm going to be here, just me and you, my wonderful audience, and take calls where you share your experience and ask perhaps for some ideas or help and direction from me, but especially your experiences on how, coming off drugs, you've gone on to make a good life for yourself. What did you do? How did you go about it? So put that down in your appointment book or whatever app you have. How to live a good life free of medications. August 15th, that's what the show is going to be about. Let me see, what else do I have here in the way of call-ins? I had a wonderful call-ins. You can see I'm getting organized, not easy here, and good emails sent to me at breganlive@hotmail.com. One of them told me about a shooter who I had heard about, who had followed a mother and her children and shot them down in their car. And I had discussed this on Coast to Coast, where I'm resident psychiatrist for George Norrie. And I didn't know that it turned out that this young man who seemed to have road rage had started on new psychiatric drugs that very day. And that information was very, very useful. And I'm going to be able to use that to follow up my story on Coast to Coast. So if I sound like I've got a lot going on in my head here today, yeah, I'm trying to put together all these wonderful communications and what I'm doing with them. Now, I get a lot of calls about referrals, and I get a lot of emails about referrals. I've been getting them on BreganLive.com. And I'm just not in a position to give a lot of help with that. I do have a place where therapists, they get in touch with us. We can put them up on our resource center on empathictherapy.org, but it's really not sufficient. We can't vet them. We're not getting a lot of calls from there. And I'm just not going to be able to handle that for now, folks. I don't have a good solution other than you go into the resource center on empathictherapy.org to make referrals. It just doesn't exist, as far as I know, right now, that we have that ability. I also want to mention that Hermine got in touch with me at the BreganLive.com, our dedicated email for the show, and I'm going to answer some folks as I'm doing on air, and I won't be able to be answering you directly by email. And Hermine asked me to remind people about the 10th World Hearing Voices Conference in September 2018. It's in The Hague, Netherlands. And I checked, you could just Google it, the 10th World Hearing Voices Conference, September 2018. And Hermine's going to be speaking there. Now, Hermine, I hope you're listening, because I'm going to want to discuss with you whether you want to come on the air after the conference and talk about it. So we'll find out if Hermine's listening. We'll find out if somebody knows Hermine and can say, hey, get on to BreganLive.com and talk to him about whether she wants to be on the air here. So I'm settling down into my new high activity mode. I really feel like I'm hearing from you on Bregan Live, and I deeply appreciate it. I'm actually getting facts from you. I'm getting directions for the show. And I've got at least one more show that I'll be doing just around the material, just around the questions I've been getting on email. So stay in touch with BreganLive.com. Call in today at 888-874-4888 with questions for me and for my guest, Dr. Ma'at. Ma'at, are you there? We have you?
I am here.
Oh, thank God you're there. In my juggling all the things going on in my mind today as I'm trying to learn to handle a whole bunch of different things. I've known Ma'at since we've decided somewhere around 1995, 4, 5, 6. When she was an activist in Chicago helping fight the Violence Initiative, the Youth Violence Initiative, which was a federal racist eugenical program to go into America's inner cities and to find what was genetically and biochemically wrong with little black children who were being violent. Not about racism, not about the abuse of children, not about the terrible problems of poverty and the falling apart of the family in the inner city, not about the availability of guns, not about any of the important things to discuss, but a made-up eugenical program. And working with people like Ma'at, Ginger, and I, we shut down a whole bunch of federal programs, federal research that was eugenical, a federal conference that was eugenical. It was an amazing thing. And Ginger and I wrote about it in our book, The War Against Children of Color, The War Against Children of Color. Ma'at is just an amazing human being. She has a non-traditional master's degree in the healing sciences, so even from the beginning, she knew that that wasn't the way to go. And she got a PhD in philosophy. She has so many different things to talk about, but she made a decision, and Ma'at, well, you won't know this particularly, that fits with a lot of things we've talked about on this radio show. which is that she decided that she didn't want to be a licensed professional. She didn't want to have to deal with all of that. And we'll talk some about that, that she wanted to work outside the system. So she devoted herself from the viewpoint of pastoral counseling. And she has counseled people. She's been an activist in areas of mental health, racism, women's issues, children's issues for a long time. And her primary creed is empathy first, not apathy. Wow, that is a great one. And if it weren't for my opening up my phone lines a few sessions ago, I would not ever have gotten in touch with Mahat because she called on the phone. Now, her name is spelled M-A-A-T. You can find her online, Googling her, a psychologist in Chicago. She's a counselor in Chicago or just activist in Chicago, M-A-A-T. You'll find her, and she can give you other ways of getting in touch. And call in if you'd like to talk with her and me. And if not, we will just talk with you. Mahat, welcome. Welcome to the show. It's so good. Welcome to my life again. How are you?
Good afternoon. Good to be working with you again. I am so happy that you are still active and doing this live show and keeping people aware of where they can go for help, real treatment, without the chemicals, the drugs, the abuse and neglect that they get through the regular mental health system.
I'm very glad to be working with you again, too. Go ahead. Continue.
As an alternative practitioner, yes, you are thoroughly correct. I did make the decision to go outside of the state and federal licensing system. I did get licensed, though, in my pastoral counseling. Right now, I am still what may be considered a radical person in the movement, supposed to be retired, but how can you retire when people are still being harmed, when people are still afraid and unaware, and just being led in the wrong directions? And your book, The War Against Children of Color, was just so fantastic. I believe it was in 1994 when we first made contact, because you had written papers on the Federal Violence Initiative, and you actually called me at home one Sunday to warn us that this project, which in Chicago was called the Project on Human Development, was coming to Chicago under the guise of helping people and providing jobs to students, people who needed an income. $9 an hour is what they were paying to students and others. That seemed like a lot of money then. So that project led me to co-found the Chicago Coalition Against the Violence Initiative with another psychotherapist, Dr. Samel Abdullah, who was well known in the mental health system in Chicago and had a private practice. And we became a national catalyst for groups all over the country to warn parents, schools, churches, students, all over the country. And Howard University and other universities began to give seminars. We gave talks. You even came out to University of Illinois at Chicago to speak on behalf of the coalition. We had many people out, many from social work, psychology, psychiatry. We had parents. We had young people. It was fantastic. We actually shut the project down. So, yes, I am very happy to be on your show today, and I hope that people will call in with their questions if they are going through various issues that you can help them with or that I can answer. And, again, thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's really good to be back in touch and to, in a sense, be reminiscing a little bit. But these issues still remain there. You raised an interesting question when we were chatting. You You said that with the concerns about violence breaking out here and there around the country again, if I thought that the federal government was going to start, returning to do this kind of eugenical research and try to, build on the fear of violence, in particular, I don't think you said this, but particularly the fear of African-American violence, which was what stimulated violence initiative. The folks out there don't know about that. My wonderful audience, a lot of the violence initiative was built by psychiatrists and neurosurgeons, because there were neurosurgeons who were advocating lobotomy for the rioters in the inner city. I mean, you can't believe it when you listen to it. So it's in the book, The War Against Children of Color. And it's out of print now, but I'm sure you can get copies cheap online, I would think. But we, it was just quite amazing the kinds of people who were advocating about violence in the inner city in the early years. And that's what came back in the early 1990s as a theme again, but now the violence was more really what black children perpetrating violence against black children, black men against black men, and so on, and didn't spill over so much into rioting, but it just became another excuse. It became another excuse for intervening medically into American society. Now we've got. This tragic situation of children, just of every race. In fact, the more advantages you have, the more likely you are to get drugged in many cases because parents think it's scientific. We've just got so much drugging of our children right now. It's an American tragedy.
Yes, Peter. Right now, as we speak, there are parents calling on me and others to help them with their adult children who may be in psychiatric facilities, and others who they're sending out of Illinois to other states to have convulsive shock therapy, which is illegal in Illinois, but they still use it in Indiana. Many of the people in the disability movement are totally opposed to that. The fact that the pharmaceutical industry has to sell their drugs and the medical industry has to use their tools, it's like a controlling factor. There are many theories out there that this is all part of the depopulation theory. I don't think it's a theory at all. I think it's a reality. All this thing about chemical trails being dropped in areas where there are nursing homes, people who are disabled, people who are black, people who are Hispanic, but not in the Asian communities. We do know that mental health crosses many races, boundaries, genders. But for some reason, it is only being used, the chemtrails, only in communities that are non-Asian. I just find that when the government and the pharmaceutical industry get together, it's just not a good thing. It looks good on paper. It looks good with the TV ads. But the results I have seen of human beings who have lost their ability to control their lives, to think, many of them homeless in the streets, many of them being shot and killed, literally murdered by so-called peace officers, also known as the police. Most of the people being killed recently have all been people who have had some form of mental illness. It does not mean that most of the violence is being caused by people who are mentally ill. We know that in the corporate world, people are so under stress, they're on antidepressants, etc. I'm very concerned about that, and I think that some of the people in the industry, like Gary Null, have talked against this, the drugging of people to solve stress, the drugging of people who are depressed because they don't feel happy in their jobs, in their lives, people who are being underpaid, low salaries, people who live where they can't pay the rent. All of this is affecting them. A lot of your Vietnam vets are being treated, for post-traumatic stress. They're being given drugs. a lot of them can't even hold a complete thought in their head without taking a pill. And some of them really don't think that the pills work, but they're under the control of the pharmaceutical industry and the doctors, and they think that somehow they will work. We know in the alternative industry that drugs do not cure any form of mental illness. They really don't cure physical illness. They're really just a Band-Aid until the person finds an alternative or the body heals. However, I do know that there might be people listening who may have a question about that, why empathic therapy works better, why you yourself, Dr. Bracken, risked your practice, your life, your career to talk against things like Prozac, to actually talk against prescribing drugs, not only to children but to adults. I've been very impressed with your work and Ginger's.
Well, I want to raise a little controversy about one issue. I think the police need a lot more credit and understanding than they're getting, because they are in situations now which are just impossible. That, for one thing, they're not trained particularly in nonviolent communication and conflict resolution. And they're dealing with, as you noted, a number of the people who get shot have psychiatric histories and are at least being irrational, and the police are scared and nervous themselves. Police being shot is way up. The rate of police being shot right now is way up. So, I don't think the police are so much the problem here as the entire culture and the issues of poverty and unemployment in the inner cities, and the which is improving right now. I think there's just so many issues, and I just wouldn't want to be in the shoes of a policeman, white or black. I think it's a lot more hazardous life than I live, taking on the pharmaceutical industry. But I just didn't want to let that pass, because I have a lot of sympathy for what the police have to face in every community now in this country, and they're getting very little support for what is a really, really difficult job. I don't know if you want to respond to that, or should we can go on to continue in another area.
I do want to respond. I do really want to respond. I have found very few, but a few policemen right here in Chicago who have been trained. There is an institute in Chicago to deal with crisis. Whenever it involves a person who is known or suspected to have mental illness, the 911 number or whoever is making the call is supposed to also talk with the crisis institute. It's called CIT. And they are supposed to dispatch trained officers. It doesn't happen most of the time, and that's what the problem is. It's not consistent. It's not something that happens even across the city, much less across the state or across the country. And you are absolutely right. The main problem is not the police so much as the focus on the wrong things. I mean, people are, they're suffering. They can't make ends meet. Even some people are working two and three jobs and still find it hard to make ends meet. The children aren't learning as well as they could in schools that are just set up to push paper. The teachers are under stress. Children are afraid. Teachers are afraid. Police officers are afraid. You cannot solve the problem with a pill.
No, nor with a taser, unfortunately, either, or guns. We have a caller, Curtis, from Chicago. Curtis, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Curtis. Curtis Harris, or Curtis.
Hey, Dr. Ma, how you doing?
I'm fine.
Do you know each other?
Yes,
we do.
Oh, well, good. Hi, Curtis. Welcome aboard.
Yeah. No,
you have a comment, a thought?
Hello?
Waiting for you to proceed, Curtis.
Yes, I've known for the last 12 years, and she has worked on some people to be off completely of medication. Doesn't work for everybody, and people do need to take their medication. But it's not the magic bullet. You got to do therapy and use the coping skills that they give you. Now, as for CIT, we're working on a bill here in honor of a teen who was killed by Calumet City police officers. This bill is called Stephon Watts Law. He got shot by two police officers. They knew he had autism. They've been to his house 10 times, and his home was coded, indicating that person has a mental failure. On that failed morning, his dad called for help. And by the time they got there, Stephon was calm. And his dad told, "We don't need you anymore. He's doing okay." They came anyway. And as he was using a bug knife to get his computer, one cop fired a shot into his chest, his shoulder, and the failed one hit his head. So we're working on a bill that does not involve CIT and law enforcement and transport people in middle distress into a hospital.
Yeah. Curtis, will you have some background noise that's making it a little hard to hear you?
Yeah.
I don't know if you have a TV on or it was just some folks talking. Dr. Mott, did you want to respond or ask him some further questions?
I couldn't hear most of what you were saying, Curtis. However, I'm
sure talking about a bill. Maybe you know something about that bill as well. I think to not have police involved in the transfer or interventions with people who have mental illness issues, something along those lines.
Okay. Are you speaking, Curtis, of a bill that would prevent policemen from transporting people who have been arrested that have mental illness? Or are you speaking of, I'd like some clarification about it. I believe, Curtis, speaking of the stress that people are already under if they have gotten arrested. And are you speaking of that, Curtis?
No, now about that, it's about a bill where people with mental illness in crisis does not involve law enforcement, like it did to Stephon Watts.
Dr. Mott, do you understand what he's asking about?
I think that that he's trying to ask or state that law enforcement should not be involved in any type of transport of people who have any sort of mental illness because they're already under stress. They have anxiety. So who would you prefer to transport them? There are a few, not many, policemen who have degrees in social work and have training in crisis intervention. That's what the CIT stands for, and all policemen are supposed to have that training. Unfortunately, they do not.
Yeah, well, you and I need to talk about it. We've got too much background noise to keep a good conversation going with Curtis. I mean, it's going to be a huge problem because if you emphasize psychiatric interventions, you're going to have people in white coats with syringes. And I mean, it's a terrific problem when people are disturbed or out of control. I don't know. Do you know the story of this person whom he said was autistic who was shot. I heard vaguely about this, but I don't know the story.
I've only heard vaguely about it, too, but he is correct. There was someone who was autistic who was shot. I do know there are some activists working on a bill, and I wish that the persons who are working on that bill would call in or who are supporting it.
Yeah.
There are people who are
let me give the number, 888-874-4888. We've got open lines. Please call in and we can chat more about it. These issues that you and I are trying to look at today are, they're complicated beyond belief. There's been a lot of talk about increased employment now in the inner city, that we've had this occur under Trump. Do you see any evidence of that? Is employment going up in Chicago, or
where it is happening in the inner city? There is employment going up in the technology field. There is no increase in employment of people who are disabled, who are qualified to work. I don't see an increase in the number of people who are out in the street homeless in Chicago, whether in my neighborhood or another. Yes, there are jobs out there. I have looked into some, but they are not hiring certain people. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Right.
Part of the problem lies with the fact that if you have a low credit score, believe it or not, some employers will not hire you. And I'm not speaking of for financial jobs, just regular jobs. No money involved, no financial, no handling of money involved. And if your credit score is low or you're in debt, they will not hire you. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it really makes it hard for people to improve their circumstances and their conditions. It makes it very, very difficult. What level do you think that these problems have to be solved at? That sounds more like state and city than national in many ways.
It is a national issue. It does need to be handled city by city, state by state. But the bottom line is that no matter how much money is poured into the states by the federal government, if the money doesn't reach the areas where it's needed, it's almost useless. We've had programs to hire people for technology jobs. There are people out there who have technical skills, but there's a movement now not just to hire people for the skills, but for their commitment, their willingness to learn, their willingness to work and be reliable. I saw that posted recently on LinkedIn. So why not? Where is all this money going for which the federal government says they have increased the hiring? I think that when people are not in the state system for looking for jobs, they don't count. But there are quite a bit of people that I know who are unemployed or underemployed. The caller who just called in, I think that one time Curtis was looking for a job. And Curtis has worked with the organization that I founded, Black Network and Children's Emotional Health, and IMPROVE, which is a paratransit advocacy group. I'm not going to tell you any of Curtis's diagnosis, but I will tell you this. He was qualified for some jobs, but not others, but he was not hired in some jobs because of certain diagnoses. Not that he couldn't work, but that the employer thought that he wouldn't be a good fit.
Employers are getting a hold of that information somehow.
Yes, exactly.
How do they get that? Do you know?
Well,
I've not heard of that before.
If you're on the internet, Peter, if you're on the internet, social media, they find out a lot.
Okay, especially if the person's been talking about himself, they can find out a lot on social media.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there are people who, let's say you're on LinkedIn. you know, LinkedIn requires you to give some type of profile information. They go in there and look. They Google you on Facebook. They Google you. And then people do pictures. They post parties. They post lunch. They post all sorts of things because people want to have a full life. They want to be involved. So some people do not have the social and emotional intelligence to know what to post, what not to. That's part of the problem. So they're penalized for not knowing.
Obviously, one of the major issues for the inner cities is the condition of the family and the lack of a male presence. I've worked with African-American groups over the years where men, African-American men were banding, you know, developing groups to support African-American men to stay in the family and in particular to stay in touch with them, to, you know, be fathers to their children. What progress is being made and where do you see help coming from for what may be the most fundamental problem of all, which is the families of people in poverty and how they are often just not taking care of the children properly, especially the men in the families?
Well, there are a few groups in Chicago who are working to improve the image of black men as well as Latino men. Here's the problem. If the program is in one part of the city and you live far away from it and you don't have the extra money to get to those programs, then you can't participate in them. In the old days, the churches and community centers would bus people. Well, the funding has been cut, Peter, for a lot of the social programs. In Chicago, we do have the Heartland Alliance. We have Salem Baptist Church, which has probably has a program that can empower males, help, you know, men to become better fathers. We have all sorts of churches that do this for their members. Some of these people may not be members. And then we have the male empowerment program that is run in another part of the city, which has been running for years, where men who are homeless are given an opportunity to transition into housing. They're taught the construction trades, and they're given seminars and lessons that empower them, you know, to develop themselves socially, morally, and fit into the community. We need to not reinvent the community, but to reinstate it. There's a lot of gentrification going on. People are being separated. Those who have certain privileges, who moved to suburban areas, are now moving back into the city. And as they move back into the city, that property may be reclaimed. It may be sold. The rents may go up, and people end up moving out of the city, out of state, and they are isolated from these programs. If you don't have proper transportation, you can't get to the jobs. You can't get to the programs. That is what I'm seeing in Chicago right now. And it's not just happening in Chicago. It's happening all over.
Yeah, I'm sure that is happening. On what level is the funding getting cut back? And did that start recently under the Trump administration, or did that happen earlier?
Well, I think
what's going on in terms of funding
administration right now? I have to be honest. It started before the Trump administration, but there were a lot of people with trades who were able to get jobs, you know, under the Obama administration. But there's still this level of poverty that exists in communities, whether they're low income, moderate income, or whatever. Costs have gone up, rents, utilities, transportation. All of that has increased, whereas people's salaries have remained sort of flatlined. There are a lot of people who no longer get raises because the companies wanted to stay in business. I have seen several social service programs that were excellent go out of business. prior to the Trump administration. One of them was a program that was part of the Jane Addams system. That whole program went out of business. And that program had everything. It had something for everybody. It was a program that was well respected. They just didn't get the funding. Then there are other programs that have been cut because they didn't get the funding, whether it was private funding or government funding. And then under the state of Illinois, the system that has been established for human services under the current governor, Bruce Rauner, is just not functioning properly. People have been cut off from human services that shouldn't have been. Their computer system has failed. Most of us who are activists in this system have constantly, over and over demanded audiences with the governor. He won't talk. He won't budge. We have caregivers who work for people who are disabled, whether they have mental illness, behavior problems, or physical disabilities. They have not had a raise in years. Prior to this governor being elected here in Illinois, there was a raise approved. They've never gotten it, $15 an hour. They're still working under $13. Last year, they were awarded 48 cents an hour, never got it. The governor is at the Illinois Supreme Court level, fighting to give 48 cents to workers who should have gotten 15 3 years ago. Meanwhile, rents are going up, mortgages are going up, taxes are going up, food, you name it. They have all increased, gas, transportation. Just public transportation itself is expensive for some people. People coming from far, let's say, whether they're in the inner city or suburbs, they have to pay so many fares just to get to a job that is low paying. Or even if it's not low paying, their expenses are so high for their children in school, for themselves. You know, they're just not making enough to say that they are living at a level that they need. I mean, I don't know what to call it except a poorly designed system. The system was reinvented under this governor. At the federal level, the Trump administration promised not to cut Social Security. Yet here, we've worked for Social Security. I'm retired according to Social Security. I don't even get my full retirement money. However, even those who do, the federal government is now proposing to tax it. Well, we already paid taxes. Those were the taxes we paid in order to stay in the system when we retire, and now they want to put another tax on us. Seniors are not the only ones hurting. Think about the young people. How many jobs are going around this summer? What are these people who are promoting violence? Why are they doing it? Well, there are several reasons. Some of them is poor nutrition, poor diet, poor thought processes, low self-esteem, or needs. They're needy, and they don't know any other way to get it except to take it from someone they think has what they need. Then we got all these people with these chemicals. Some of the chemicals are making them violent. I mean, there's no denying it. I mean, we can lie about it and say, oh, it's due to poor upbringing. No. I mean, crime is happening all over. It's not just in an area that is considered impoverished. Poor education, malnutrition, all of this is contributing to this.
Yeah. We're in a situation now where we actually have almost full employment. That is that there's actually, people actually are looking for workers, and they're looking often in areas that many Americans have given up wanting to do the work in. Very few people now are getting trained as plumbers and electricians and as roofers and all the other work that goes into building houses and taking care of cars and taking care of lawns. There are places where there aren't enough people to actually manage the lawns in the community who do that work. And I think that a huge, more and more issue now that that we have some of the lowest employment rates in history are including for African-Americans, Hispanics, women. He's going to be training people for jobs and also getting people used to the idea that, you know, that work is good, because there's been so much encouragement in the other direction to seek benefits. I think that it's just really important to encourage autonomy and to make available training. The public schools need to be really encouraging training in what are now fairly high income jobs. And people just aren't trained to do it.
It's striking. Also the issue that there's we're not a one-size-fits-all society anymore. There are many people with disabilities who could be trained for some of those jobs, but the employers aren't willing to take a chance with mm-hmm. them. There are many seniors who would like to have encore careers, but they're turning them down because of their age. And I am a witness to this. I'm one of them. I mean, with all my degrees and training, I did apply for some jobs, you know, there were field work jobs or jobs I could do at home. I wasn't hired. I didn't get it on tape, but some people just thought I was too old. I'm 70 years old. I don't consider myself old.
But then, yeah, you're more than a decade younger than I am. And I don't feel too old. I don't feel too old for almost anything.
Right.
Need a little more rest, that's about it. Need a little more rest sometimes.
The American with Disability Act, and then there's an age discrimination law. I mean, those things were put there, you know, for the protection of certain people. And if someone wants to work, why not? And if the industry needs workers and they can't find them in one place, why not go to another? I did propose a training program, especially for people who had low income, were underemployed, were disabled, were finding it hard to find jobs. I tried to convince a company in Sarasota, Florida, to send us the kits and for the mayor of this city, Chicago, to open up 740-something thousand square feet of factory space where people could build these cars. Cars that were solar-powered, that people, you know, who were seniors, people who were low income, could afford to buy them and drive them on the street. And they were easy to park, easy to find parking spaces, and, you know, creating jobs in the energy field, you know, just based on solar energy, and using the plug-ins that are all over now. They're at hospitals for the electric cars. They're at grocery stores such as Whole Foods. They didn't want to do it, though.
Let me pick up on something you said that I've been getting more and more interested in and doing more and more work in the area of. And you talked about being the advantages of being an unlicensed therapist, healthcare provider, and you're doing it as pastoral counselor. I've got a lot of work going on now that I actually want to take a minute to tell people about that relate to this. My latest frequent alert on my website on Bregan.com addresses a new course that we did the Shakedown Cruise of last year. And that's a course on why and how to stop taking psychiatric drugs. And if you go to Bregan.com and look at the frequent alert, you can go right to Pam Popper's website. Pam's worked with me in developing the course, and it's aimed at any level. You could be a family member, you could be a psychiatrist, you could be the patient involved, but it's a very serious course. It's a lengthy, in-depth course on why and how to stop taking psychiatric drugs, and it's the most detailed presentation of my thinking I've ever done. I think I've got a few dozen videos that are a part of this course. It takes a once a week. It takes a few months to do the course. The The course is live and interactive, so that you'll be talking with a wonderful young psychiatrist, Pinar Miski, about these issues, and I'll make some appearances as well live in the course. So this is a new big deal in the direction that I'm going, to try to present in-depth material to people who anyone can use. You use it within the bounds of the law, but you can use it in any way you want in your own life, and you can use it through helping other people. And Pam and I are having a conference in November that you can find on the website. The conference is November 8th and 9th and 10th, over that weekend. You can look up the conference under upcoming on my website. And we're going to be introducing at that conference something Rod, you'll be very, very interested in. We're introducing a two-part course called The Heart of Being Helpful, after my book, The Heart of Being Helpful. And the first part is going to be on how to be helpful to yourself, how to get strength, how to develop yourself, how to take on life, which keeps coming at all of us, how to be more able to control your own mind and your own actions and get what you want out of life. And that's going to be part one. And part two is going to be how to help other people. And we're not going to specify that you have to be a therapist to take this course, and we're not going to claim it's therapy. It's going to be about how to help people. It's outside the system, and anyone could benefit from it. You could be a professional psychologist, a pastoral psychologist. You could be a mother, a father. You could be taking care of your mother or father. You can be in a marriage where you want to learn more about how to help each other to live a better life. And this course will be available at the conference. We'll be selling it at the conference. So I'm doing a lot of things to try to bring skills to people, regardless of whatever their level is. And then the individual can decide, do they want to be a pastoral counselor? Do they want to be a coach? Do they want to just use this in their personal lives? But I think it's about time to really stop giving mental health professionals a monopoly on the information necessary for helping other people. And Pam Popper is very much in her organization oriented around giving people the information, the scientific information, the interpersonal psychology information, and having them work in whatever context they're working in. So I'm very excited about doing this kind of work. And you may find some of it at some point useful to some of the people that you'll be working with.
Well, Peter, I certainly think this is a wonderful idea. I just have 1,000 things on my bucket list. But I did invite some people that I know, some who are retired, some who aren't, to this call, and I'm hoping that they will, if they didn't get on, that they will look at the archives. That is such a wonderful course. I hope Curtis looks into it as well. I don't know anyone else doing this. No one but you.
Yeah. There are some other attempts. These are going in depth. The course on why and how to stop taking psychiatric drugs it's an intense course. It requires reading. It's a ton of videos, not just by me, but by other people. Eventually we're also going to produce one that is more available to more people, because it isn't going to be so intense, and it's going to be at a lower price on these same issues of understanding the psychiatric drugs. And I'm very, very excited, though, that we were planning to have out by the conference. I hope we can make it. We're going to do our very, very best to have out the part one of the course on the heart of being helpful. I'm going to be spending a lot of my next decade or two just trying to get information out to people on what they really need to live their lives better, and as well as what they need to find alternatives to the pharmaceutical industry, the psychiatric industry, the food industry, which is also a terrible affront to humanity. It encourages everything that's expensive and nothing that's healthy. Indoctrinating our kids. You know, our kids are a market. I'm sure you've thought about this, Matt, that our kids they've become a market for everything bad that people want to sell. Violent video games, violent movies, psychiatric drugs, junk food. And that's yet another area that I want to get involved in. We have 1 or 2 minutes left. Do you have some final thoughts that you'd like to share?
Well, I'd like to talk about the fact that there is a movement in Chicago where psychiatric survivors or mental health survivors are really doing wonderful work with Kathy Powers to stand up for their rights as human beings or spiritual beings in the mental health system. I'm more concerned about those who would like to get off of the drugs. There are many who do. And I'm concerned about those who want to use alternatives such as spiritual treatment, meditation, yoga, as well as counseling. Personally,
I'm with you on that very, very much.
Yes. Personally, my own children were able to heal through these alternatives, and you would never even guess that they had ever had any type of psychiatric disorders. Of course, if you give them bad food,
yes, exactly,
or you provoke them, just like any other human being, you know, they could get edgy and touchy. But my son had about 20 different psychiatric labels when he was only 10 years old, and I just wasn't going to have him.
He's doing good now.
Oh, he's doing excellent. Yes.
Yeah.
You would never. They wanted to put him in a psychiatric institute forever. Yeah. At the age of 10, come on now.
Well, I'm sure he was blessed to have you helping him get through that maze and getting free of it, folks. This is the Dr. Peter Bregenhauer. Maat, M-A-A-T, you can find her on the internet, Chicago activist, therapist, well worth learning more about her. Thank you so much for being on the show. And folks, don't forget, you can get in touch with me now, BregenLive@Hotmail.com, BregenLive@Hotmail.com. I'm paying attention to what you're telling me about the radio show. Let me know. We're going to be building in shows in response to what I hear. And the first one that I'm building in response to what I hear is going to be August 15th, How to Live a Good Life as You're Getting Off the Meds and Living in a medication-free internal environment. Don't forget Bregen.com for just learning a lot about what's going on in our world. And Hermine, again, thanks for reminding us about the upcoming 10th World Hearing Voices Conference in September. And if you're there, I'd like to hear from you. Thanks so much. Thanks, my wonderful audience, for listening. Talk to you next week, 4 p.m. to call in 888-874-4888. Don't forget that. You can call in 4 p.m. on Wednesdays. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye, Mahat.
Take care, Peter. Peace.
Peace.